the medical approach that we have today promotes that we get disconnected. And all of it, in medical sense, is pathology orientated. And it's about managing the symptoms.
Very often when we speak about spirituality, it tends to feel like something private. There's a sense that because it is something sacred, then it needs to be kept behind closed doors, or it feels that it's something that you can only engage with in the privacy of your own home. So for most of us, spirituality is something that belongs in a quiet room with the warm glow of candles and incense wafting in the silent breeze of our most sincerest prayers. But in reality, all of us know that spirit is not only within us as people, but it is in everything, everywhere, all at once. And it is very odd to think that we can leave our spiritual life behind when we leave home or when we leave our secret spaces. Despite that, spirituality, and more specifically African spirituality, is something that is simply odd to talk about in public. In fact, we are more comfortable with encountering Christianity and its perspectives than we are with encountering any kind of African spiritual belief or practice in public. The reasons why African spirituality is such a sidelined belief system is as complicated as it is obvious. It is a belief that has been demonized for at least 200 years. This process has been systematic and deeply pervasive in all sectors of our society. But despite all of these challenges, for those of us who hold these beliefs as sacred, every day we have to wake up and we have to go to work. The nature of African spirituality is such that it involves not just the acknowledgement of the existence of the spiritual realm, but also the existence of amadlozi and spiritual forces and our individualized encounters that we have in our daily lives with our spiritual guides. What is strange, though, is that as African spirituality continues to grow and more people adopt it as a belief system, when it comes to the workplace, it seems as though it doesn't even exist. Speaking about things like amadlozi in a corporate space is definitely an awkward topic. It is treated with extreme suspicion and doubt, and it invokes a deep sense of mistrust between colleagues, to the point where the working environment itself can become impossible to navigate, and for some people, they end up having to quit or they are forced to leave. To try to understand this topic, I've decided to speak to a few people who are currently working or have worked in the corporate space in different capacities to hear what their insights are. And I think the best place to start off with maybe would be in HR or the executive departments to hear how some practitioners deal with the realities of spirituality in the workplace. And the first person that I spoke to is Umam Mpho Sadiki, who is an author, a qualified clinical nurse, an indigenous healing practitioner, and an executive coach with 25 years experience in the corporate space. from our working life or our working environment. So what I want to talk to you about is basically spirituality in the corporate world. So, and to get into that, I would like to know from you, what is your relationship with spirituality or your spiritual background?
So firstly, I'm a rural girl. I grew up in Limpopo. I'm a born of a mother that comes from a royal family that had certain practices around how we build communities and how we can thrive as communities. I'm a born of a father who's what they call Black Jews, who've got certain practices around how we uphold our own spirituality. And I think on both sides of my family, I come from a family of healers who believed very much in nature and primarily, let's call them plants and herbs and how that helps your body and your well-being. I come from a family where we did rituals, if you can call them rituals, throughout a person's life cycle that are like gates of passage. And I think over time I've come to understand African cosmology, and I've anchored myself around the fact that I'm African. And what that means is being anchored by certain principles. You know, I observe nature and nature guides me a lot. I'm one that plays with, you know, the sense that I'm part of an ecosystem, and what I do affects the whole. I'm part of the people that understand that the role that I come with is meant for me, but it's also meant for me to serve others at the same time. So those are the kind of things that I think for me orientate my spirituality. And I have certain practices that I would say are a blend of mindfulness and a blend of rituals of connecting with my own ancestors and my own way of connecting with what I call Mwali, which is God, creator, higher power, whatever people call that. But also very much not being divorced from the fact that I'm still a human being, having a human experience. So there's a lot of work I need to do on myself. And that's sort of the different layers that shape my orientation in spirituality, and all of that I infuse in the work that I do in the organizations I've worked for.
I'm so glad to be talking to you, in the sense that I think a lot of the time the people that I speak to have a background in spirituality in a certain modality, if I can put it that way. So the first question I want to ask you, and these questions, obviously, I'm asking you for very much your personal opinion, right? We're not dealing with textbooks, so I really would like to hear your personal take on this. So what role do you think spirituality played in the lives of Black people pre-colonization?
You know, I think it grounded people to be interconnected. I think it grounded people to understand life beyond themselves. I think it guided people in terms of their calling and their role in society. I think it gave ways of life, as in when we are faced with certain things in life, how do we go about dealing with those things? And I think it gave tools, pre-colonization. So there was a lot more connection to a whole lot more things. And I take that from how I used to see my grandmother, and the way she used to guide us to do certain things, how that is completely so different in today. So I would say the primary difference for me is there was more connection then, and there's more disconnection post-colonization, now during our times due to colonization and apartheid. I think those for me are the
Where do you think the disconnection is primarily?
So I think firstly, there's disconnection with our own bodies, right? So pre-colonization, there was an essence of you having to understand the cycles that are happening within you. And there would be certain rituals you would go through in order to understand and to know how to navigate and to understand the gifts that come with that, as an example. Whereas today, I can tell you, I don't think we even understand what cycles happen within us, and unless you did biology in school, but even the way you did it, you might not even fully understand that your emotions really drive your hormones and your hormones drive your physiology. So there's a lot of illnesses you are dealing with today simply because you are disconnected in understanding the ecosystem of the physical body. The medical approach, by the way, I do have a medical background. It was my first qualification. The medical approach that we have today promotes that we get disconnected, in that you have a doctor for every organ. You have kidney problems, you must go and see a kidney specialist. You have eye problems, you must go and see an eye specialist. And all of it, in medical sense, is pathology orientated. And it's about managing the symptoms. It doesn't get you into understanding the root cause and having to deal with the ecosystem of the body. So that's one way that we are also so disconnected. And the medicines we take are not about awakening us, are about numbing the symptoms so you don't have to deal with the symptoms. So you are disconnected with your own body, you know. Secondly, we are disconnected with nature, in the sense that pre-colonization, I mean, we understood the role of rivers in our lives. We understood we had a relationship with the animals. We understood relationship with land. We understood, you know, there was just a connection about how we interact with the moon or how we interact with the sun or any of these facets that of the experience we're having today. Whereas in today's lives, it's a complete a shift of connection with the universe, which is why governments or certain world bodies now are even trying to, or even society activists are trying to pull all of us to be mindful of what we're doing in the environment. So we are disconnected with nature in that way. We are disconnected spiritually in that I think we've all come to adopt religion as spirituality. We haven't, there was a lot obviously that happened with the disconnect in terms of our relationship with our ancestors and our own African practices, where it was deemed to be, you know, to be evil in many ways, and we have come to not relate with it because no one wants to be associated with something dark or with something evil. But in that way, then there is that complete disconnection with the guidance that comes from the other side. There's a complete disconnect in how we relate with God, because we are more in the practices of religion and not in the being of the connection with our spirituality. So to me, I would call this era a disconnection in those different parts. And therefore we are we find ourselves surviving and not thriving.
Yes.
The mechanics of how society operates today are therefore driving us to learn more survival skills and not thriving skills. And there are, you know, systems that benefit from this disconnection, I believe.
You said something, and this is more of a side note, you said something that caught my attention when you said that medicine today is aimed at numbing ailments. And then the assumption is that with indigenous medicine, it doesn't numb ailments. What does it do? Does it then expose or bring out, or what does it do?
I think firstly, my recollection of my life growing up, and when also I engage a lot of people within my own circles that understand the role of plants and herbs,
yeah.
And the medicines that we take. Firstly, is it actually helps you to detoxify your system. So it is helping you to take out the toxins that you have, meaning it's trying to help you renew yourself, and therefore it appreciates that you go through life and you can get off balance. So we do need to be able to try and bring homeostasis back, which is the order of nature, in that nature exists to rebalance. It exists to bring homeostasis. That's the first thing that I see. So when they say, you know, you must palaza, or you must clean your tummy, or you must filter, and all of that, even in my medical training says, you know, I'm expelling so that I could feel lighter and I can bring more of life out of my cells that make up my being. Whereas if you understand pharmacology, in the main, that's not its primary role. In the main, you are taking painkillers to numb your nerves so you don't feel the pain. It doesn't mean the pain is not happening. And no one is looking at the root cause of that. But over and above.
So when you take painkillers, the pain is still there. You just don't feel it.
It's still there. You just don't feel it.
I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah, you just don't feel that.
I've never thought of it
that like, way. It's like a mini anesthesia. Because that's the point. We're just blocking your nerves so that you then don't feel the pain.
But
the situation is still there. And in the main, you know, if you speak to any medical practitioner, they will tell you that 80% of the illnesses we have is what we call inflammation-related illnesses, right? So what is basically happening in your body is, you know, God designed us so we can be able to be adaptive to stress, right? So when stress is happening, you see a lion, or, you know, you see a threat, you have adrenaline that pumps your heart fast so you can be able to have more blood to run. You have cortisol that allows you to burn everything in your body to turn it into sugar so you can be able to have energy to run, right? But when all of that is happening, you switch off every system that's not required for running or for fighting. So you switch off your immune system, you switch off your digestive system, you switch off your reproductive system, you switch off the executive part of your brain, you know, and it means if you are constantly in that drive, you are constantly high on those two hormones, which cause high inflammation in your body. And depending on what kind of stress you're dealing with, it affects any organ of your body. So what happens when you go to the doctors, you got a headache, or you got this inflammation on your head, or something is wrong with any part of your organ, they actually give you, in the main, cortisol-related medication beyond antibiotics. Right. So it tells you already what they are doing is to simply help you switch off temporarily what is creating an overdrive that's killing the health of your system. Whereas African Muti does the opposite.
So when the receptors are then cut off.
Yeah.
It's basically to allow your body to figure out to fix the problem.
Yeah.
What without you being aware of it?
Correct.
That's essentially what's happened.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. I don't know why I never really thought of it that way.
That is it.
Because I'm thinking that the medicine is fixing.
No.
I'm not imagining that it's only attending to part of certain signals
that make me aware of the product.
It's attending to certain signals.
Yes.
In the main, that's what it's doing. Whereas what African Muti is doing is it's getting into a serious spring cleaning mode. That's what it's doing. That is why, you know, if you go to any healer in the main, the basics they're going to ask you to do is literally detoxing processes before you start doing anything else. But they overlay that with, in today's language, you call energy medicine, right? Because then, you know, they're gonna either do a divination or Ufemba or any of those, which is then trying to make sure that they go beyond the physical matter, they get into the metaphysical space to say what's causing the disease. Because they appreciate the body is responding to your experiences in life. So the problem is not the body. The body is just the truth teller that is telling us what you've gone through in life. And that's the essence of African medicine. That's where it's coming from, you know.
Sure. We went on a tangent.
Yeah.
Now, we tend to associate work when we are raised, when we're growing up, we have ambitions, like I want to become this, I want to become that, and somewhere there's an implied sense that that thing that I want to do is my purpose for being here.
Mm-hmm.
And now the more I think about our careers today, the less I think there is a correlation to be between what I believe I am spiritually here to do and what my job actually is. Okay, is it gonna beep again?
I think for a bit until the power comes back.
Okay. We tend to believe that if I am in a successful career, then I am necessarily aligned with my spiritual purpose.
You know, let me position it this way. My orientation of our African ways of doing things is that there is parts of the ritual when a child is born where the elders try and connect with the ancestors to try and get a sense of, you know, giving a name to the person, or and that is somewhat, you know, involved in terms of understanding why this person came to this world. And they try and get guidance through rituals and connecting with the ancestors to get there. And the point of that is that it is them trying to listen so that the name they give you kind of propels you into your purpose, into your intention, and to your serving of why you're here. So it's almost like while you are growing up already, there's a bigger orientation and that is helping you navigate what it is you are here. So you use it like as your compass, you know. And in most instances, you are guided then through these different life cycle rituals to sort of manifest that a bit more.
Yeah.
But what is happening in organizations, at least in my experience so far, is that we are choosing careers from a survival point of view, right? So you understand that the world has got particular templates that says, you know, these are the roles that are useful in society, and therefore they pay X and they require X certain of skills. So we go for training for those roles with the intention of surviving in the matrix. And in most instances, there could be certain skill sets that you would hold that can help you be able to achieve certain roles and achieve certain quote-unquote success in terms of that role. But it's not so much connected with your spirituality, because you are not guided by your angels or your guides or your ancestors or God in terms of your overall role and essence.
You're guided by your abilities.
You are guided by what you term to be your abilities. And also, I guess in the South African sense, there's a third element in that you are also guided by the fact that, you know, we've gone past a certain history in South Africa. So in today's world, there is a sense of, employment equity and affirmative action. So it's about how do we then find ourselves in this matrix and live up to the template of what is expected of us. So we are all chasing to be CEOs, or we are all chasing to be executives, but you don't bring the natural essence and energy of your being in that role. So it's not the one that's guiding. I feel the people who are most lucky, who are somewhat less disconnected to their calling, and how they monetize it in their role in society, is probably artists, because they kind of get a sense, I'm gifted to be expressive in some ways, so they learn how to monetize.
But they're also warning for why not to follow your gift.
Yeah,
because
exactly,
you know, especially if you looked at what happened in the past 2 years with COVID and lockdown.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of artists struggled like a lot.
Yeah,
and it for a lot of people it was like, you know, your gift is not necessarily the best thing that can happen to you. It can be the worst if you live in a certain kind of society.
Yeah, and I think that is where I was going to say, I think let's appreciate that the macroeconomic systems are set up in a way that they are not supportive of individuation. And individuation would give birth to probably, if you are rooted in African cosmology, more secular type roles. So the roles that are about saving me and saving others in the interest of the whole, right? Whereas the today macroeconomic systems are not saving me and others in the interest of the whole. They are saving in the interest of the pyramid, right? So we are caught in that. If you're going to go out and look for a role today, it exists in this pyramid model.
Where essentially you exist to make people rich.
Yeah, so and that's what I call it, the pyramid, because then there's the workforce in the bottom, then you've got the managers in between, and then you've got the shareholders at the top. So those are the roles that exist. So if you are enabling yourself to individuate, and live to your spiritual calling, you are therefore forced to be a trailblazer and a pioneer. And that means you can appreciate the portals you'll have to go through in order to be able to create an economic system that actually works. And it's always easier to go the other way, where, okay, it's about learning a set of skills and having a set of knowledge tools, and I can acquire a role within the pyramid and I can earn money. But then what you then find is we are perpetuating the disconnection, right? So I'm working against myself, which therefore creates again illness in my body. We are working with the pyramid and not with the interest of the whole, which creates illness of nature and the earth that we are in. We are working against our own spirituality, which creates all these other spiritual dynamics that then happen with us as human beings. So again, it brings us to we are disconnected.
When I look at, based on what you're saying, and I look at our unemployment statistics and basically just the state of especially Black people.
Yeah.
Do you think we're sick? Do you think, and I don't mean sick in a I don't want to say disgusting way, but do you think we are not well spiritually?
We are not well holistically. We are not well holistically. You know, if I'm to say three things to that, is if you think about that example I gave you around the body, that when the body adapts to stress, it's high on adrenaline and cortisol, and it switches off certain systems in your body. It means as Black people, because we have been economically, culturally, politically, and otherwise constantly in perpetual stress, we have certain systems in our body that are not operating optimally, including the executive function of our brain, right? So it tells you already there is an illness and out of balance mode with our own bodies, right? And because we don't operate with the best part of our brains, our ability to make decisions is compromised. Because when you're on flight or flight mode, you're not making decisions from a discernment mode. That is why African spirituality teaches you to patla, teaches you to meditate, teaches you to have presence in nature. Because when you are doing that, you are off that stress mode. Your body comes back to a rest mode and you are able to bring all your capacities to function well and the best part of your brain to also be in service. So you are able to make better decisions for yourself in that way. We are spiritually unwell because we all have, you know, I mean, probably 3, 4, 5 generations within our lineages have disconnected from our ways of doing things. So we are not getting guidance in that way. We are doing things that upsets the equilibrium of our spirituality. And that causes us to have a whole lot of mental issues. It even transcends into our ability to manifest and flower and become the fruits that we are here to be. So we are ill in all facets. We are ill emotionally and in our psyche as well. Because when you're on flight or fright mode, you've got no capacity for, let's teach you how to deal with guilt and shame. You know, let's teach you how to deal with anger because we are on survival mode.
There's no time.
There's no capacity.
I have to go to work.
There's no headspace. Mm. There's no bandwidth for any of that. So the accidental disconnection when colonization happens, it's creating a much more ill of an African nation in all facets. Physiologically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Mm-hmm. And that by itself, if you think about it in the context of a seed, it means that the seed that we are is perpetually diminishing in its ability to become the fullness of what it needs to be.
So we're stuck in the dirt, basically.
We are stuck in the dirt, but also the dirt doesn't even have enabling ingredients for this seed to fully germinate and have strong roots such that it can sprout and become what it needs to be. So the potential of the African child, if you apply accounting, has been depreciating.
Okay, this is going to get depressing.
Yeah.
So now there's a really, I think that there's a very complicated relationship between our view of work and careers and spirituality, in especially in the context of such high levels of unemployment, right? Because I think a lot of people then associate their unemployedness with their lack of a spiritual life. As well, right? So what I would do is that, you know, let's say I've been struggling to find a job, you know, for years, as it were, or, you know, I graduated, I can't find a job, or I try out retrenchments, COVID, lockdown, and all of those things. Would going to a sangoma or a healer fix my unemployment status?
It's not a simple yes or no, because because the issues, as I said, are holistic. I think one, if you understand that we've been a depressed nation, by default it tells you that the depth of our own understanding of spirituality is also extremely compromised. Therefore, there is vulnerability and at times desperation, because we also all have to be economically viable. So there is a group of us who are just unfortunately suffering from that, where we get into a desperation mode and there's this understanding of, you know, if I go to a healer and, you know, I get cleansed or this and that happens and therefore, you know, I'm going to be able to manifest what I need. I think it's a very narrow way of looking at the reasons why we are unable to flower as people. And to me, I would say that partly it could be correct, because chances are, if you do go to a healer who's well grounded and vested and in understanding their indigenous knowledge, they would be able to diagnose a lot of what might have happened in your lineage, right? There are certain things that might not have gone well, certain people who might have passed on not well, and you know, certain rituals must be, you know, there are different things that need to be corrected. We need to repair and all of that, because your spiritual ring is out of balance. So in some ways, I would say yes, in that if your spiritual aspects are out of balance, it will affect your ability to manifest and get into your full abundance. But if your outlook at it is a narrow sense that simply says, oh, because I haven't done 1, 2, 3, or if I go to a healer, 1, 2, 3 would happen. I believe that even if you were to get some guidance or some rituals done, it won't be sustainable, because you would not have looked at everything in totality. You need to go and repair your spiritual ways within your lineage, within your family, you know, that needs to be sorted out. But you also need to go and figure out your psyche and your emotional well-being, which you can get help in many modalities to be able to do that. Because sometimes we frame certain things and have certain belief systems that limit our ability to see with a clear lens. You also need to go and deal with your body, because this is the vessel that holds the energy for you, right? So if you are unwell physically and you're not detoxing, you don't cleanse your body, this vessel as well, you know, is therefore not operating at its optimal sense. So to me, I would advise anyone that's feeling to be in this state of despair to say that look for a holistic way of repairing your well-being, such that you have a potential to flower better. So do body work, do psych work, do spiritual work. And even if you don't find it in the one healer, make sure that you are able to surround yourself with healers who are gifted in the different aspects. Because even in African spirituality, we've got specialization. You know, so there are those that are great at getting your body well. There are those that help you with your psyche. There are those that help you connect and heal your spiritual lineage and family issues. There are those that can help with family constellations. There are gifted spiritualities there. So I would say rather much more of a holistic approach than a narrow linear approach that says, oh, I just need to do 1, 2, 3 and therefore. And even that, I say it with a lot of compassion, because I appreciate that if we've had a 400 years of gap within our ways of doing things, the healers today don't have all the answers. Yes. You know, they are just as deprived, which is why the healers
unemployed
which is why you need to try and go to the healers that are doing a lot more work on themselves, because the more work you do on yourself, the more light comes through you, and then it's able to share more light to the next person.
So now I've gone through whatever that I needed to go through. I found a job finally after however many years. Now
yeah.
I have maybe an office, so I work in an open plan office there.
Yeah.
I have my desk, I have my my computer and everything. I'm working.
Yeah.
How can I recognize that this place, everything is fine, but there's something spiritually wrong here?
So you know, you need to work on your own intuition, because intuition is going to help you with discernment, and discernment is what is going to switch on the light bulbs about what you are asking for. So the problem with a person on a survival mode and a person on a flight or flight mode is very self-orientated, right? A person that comes out of that and very reactive in their ways, because it's about self-protection and self-preservation And most of us who are in that mode, we would go to healers. And this is where it gets wrong, right? Where we assume it's the African healers that do all these things to take the energy off. And spiritually, things are not okay in the workplace because that's our orientation. But we are unable to discern on other forces in the workplace that gets us off balance. Okay. You know, by design, capitalism has done that already.
Yes.
in the workforce, in the workplace. So to me, it's about if you do the work on yourself, firstly, you'll be able to sharpen your intuition and sharpen your discernment and know that, one, you also don't operate for just you and you and self-preservation and survival, in that you'll be able to carry more light that you can bring in the workplace first and foremost. Because it's not all about, oh, you know, you must go and get Muti so you can be strong for yourself, because that gives you a survival mindset, a self-preservation mindset, an individualistic mindset. Whereas if I'm working on myself for my discernment to be more wholesome, by default, I'm less constricted to me, I'm more expansive to the whole, right? So when I'm at workplace, I'll be able to pick up that things are not well. But I can contribute in that workplace as well to bring in interventions or initiatives that helps clear energy, that helps get everybody participate in the essence of the collective. This is the work we do with culture, right?
Would those kind of things that you would do, would they be things that you're doing overtly that everyone can see, or is these things more of you trying to figure out how you can bring more light to the work environment without necessarily involving other people, like, you know, doing your cleansing, doing your spiritual work to make sure that I am, to use modern terms, vibrating higher?
Yeah, it takes both.
Okay.
So one is you will have to do work on yourself. Some of the elements is that in what you just said.
Yes.
You know that you come in contact with people, you walk in spaces, you don't know what's happening in those spaces, you get into relationships, into workforce colleague engagements, whatever. You know, you just like you go and do your medical and you go and do your pap smear, you do energy cleansing just for yourself. But also in companies, you can contribute. Most companies who are thinking about sustainability have got people like me who work on the social fiber of the company, where part of what I do is culture work. Right, is how do we collectively shift the culture of this place such that it's enabling and expansive for everyone that works in it. So you can contribute towards the culture projects that are now beyond you just cleansing and cleansing yourself, when you are now contributing to, as a company, what are some of the things that we do, right? So when you look at culture, spirituality is part of that, because there's diversity in the workplace. We all work from different lenses. So what are some of those ideas that you can contribute towards the collective culture shift of the company? And yes, it's not a once-off, it's not a button, it's not a pill, it's a progressive work that we do as a team.
Okay. I think from what I'm getting from what you're saying is that, because if you were to bring up the topic of an environment being spiritually toxic, we all then resort to self-preservation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's bad, I need to get out of this place.
Yeah.
But what you're suggesting is that being aware of that can also be an indication for you that there is work that needs to be done in the place spiritually. Good. And by extension, right, you are the one who has to do the work, or what can I say, like dissipate the dark energies that are there. It could
contribute.
Actually be your job.
Contribute.
So now, okay, I'm working at whatever company, right? And I have a colleague, Josephine. Every time I have to do a presentation, every time I'm talking in a meeting, Josephine, and she only does it when I'm talking. You know? Like, it seems like every time I do something, you know, she starts, she's shifting in her chair. So she has a problem with me, right? Mm-hmm. There are situations where we encounter spiritually gifted people in the workplace, and we don't know what to do, and we don't know how to engage with that person, because, you know, sometimes Josefina comes and you can feel my, Josefina today, hey, and you can smell it too, you know, hey, she's, you know, and I feel like every time she's on that vibe, we struggle at work. I feel like I feel that way. How do because this is a two-sided question. There's one for the gifted person in the workplace, and then there's the rest of the people who don't necessarily have anything against the person, but they do actually feel threatened by this person's presence. So on the other side, as people who are encountering a person who is gifted, how do we make sense of what is happening?
So, unfortunately, that is happening a lot in workplace. And I think the primary reason is because we don't understand and we don't have access to knowledge and we have not been orientated around. And also the people that make decisions or lead those organizations do not also have that understanding. So I think, and on top of that, in organizations, you'll find they have what they call employee assistance wellness programs, right? But those programs in the main are to manage illnesses, right? So you've got blood pressure, diabetes, you know, all these chronic illnesses. So there is no support for those people, first and foremost, and there is no access of knowledge for the rest of us who might not even understand what that is or have grown up with a certain paradigm about what that is. So I think for me, it's for people like me or anyone else in an organization to advocate for broad support, right? So just like we have managed to have EAP, within our EAP, you know, most other companies now are starting to open up their wellness services. Most anyway have managed to open up for mindfulness, at least, right? At the very least. So you get to have yoga practitioners, But we are now advocating for spiritual leaders who come and also be of support for these people. So if I'm having a breakdown and I can access a psychologist, I should be, if I'm having a spiritual work breakdown, I should be able to access a spiritual guide person. So we are advocating for that. It's not every company that's open to that. I believe it's still advocacy work that we must do over time. Over and above that, just like in a company, you are now investing in culture that teaches you ways of doing things and trying to embed certain practices or certain behaviors. We need to be able to invest in knowledge practitioners who are coming to be indigenous knowledge teachers, because sometimes it's lack of knowledge, it's lack of understanding, and we judge them and we interpret what they're doing very differently, and we also don't know how to hold compassion or how to hold space for them because we don't have that access of information. So for me, I feel it will continue to be advocacy work that we will need to do until it creates enough momentum that most organizations include these services as part of what they're doing. You know, years ago, no one cared about leadership development, right? Over time, this, you know, after a lot of advocacy, companies start realizing, oh, you can't actually unlock value unless you are able to allow in, you know, unlock value of leadership. So I think there is no limit in our ability to advocate for that until it becomes part of policy, it becomes part of practice, it becomes part of culture. So people who are gifted with roles like mine, you know, your main role here is really being an advocate. You are advocating for the people, you're advocating for the community, you are advocating for the environment. So we must continuously do that.
In this particular case, if I were to come to you and say that, you know, I'm an employee in the company and I have a problem with a particular person, in that there is spiritual conflict, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a born-again Christian. Yeah. Josefina is a Sangoma.
Yeah.
And she's not hiding it.
Yeah.
And I feel that it is making the working environment challenging for me.
Yeah.
How would you handle such a situation?
Most companies that I've worked for at least have policies that are about inclusion and diversity. Not all of them. But usually inclusion and diversity is anchored first and foremost in our own constitution, which is about everyone having a freedom of their own human rights. And then from there, there's a couple of regulations that gets to be included in the, you know, your employment equity speaks heavily on diversity and inclusion and rights of whatever, you know, orientation of religion or spirituality the person practices. So usually I would advise that person to go to HR, because HR typically that's where the policy would reside. And they would be able to guide that person around the fact that you have the right to your own spirituality and you need to be able to practice tolerance for difference. And that the company has values around diversity and inclusion. And that's where everyone then gets protected. And then HR will typically guide about process. So even the person on the other side who's feeling discriminated because they are spiritually gifted or they are a Sangoma or whatever they are, and they are feeling not supported, they can also go to HR so that they can be protected from that sense of policy. And if that policy does not exist, I would say that the employees of those organizations should be able to go to HR, in that any company in South Africa should be able to at least, at the bare minimum, allow the constitutional rights and allow certain employee rights according to certain South African labor relations that allows freedom of practice. Obviously, yes, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, all companies have all the parameters to allow everybody to be fully practicing what they are, but that we need to be able to allow everyone to be.
This conversation has made me want to speak to someone who has been through the process of UKTWASA while working in the corporate space and has lived to tell the tale. So, I spoke to Rifilwe Lituma. She works in IT and she has recently become a Sangoma while trying to balance the demands of having a 9-to-5 job.
I would like to know your experiences with spirituality within the working environment. But before we get there, have you always known that you have a gift?
Yeah, I have always known, but I didn't know what it meant. At first, I found out in 2016, whereby I kept on having these reoccurring dreams. And that first time I had like my first dream, whereby I dreamt of my homecoming in a red skirt and white t-shirt and a Kikwaza Dlozi. I didn't know what that meant. I was far away from home. I used to live in Durban. So I'm like, what the hell is this, you know?
Were you working in Durban?
Yeah, I was working in Durban. And yeah, I just started Kadi Toro and I would write them down, and because they were something in me just said, okay, these dreams are quite important. So let me write them down. And when I go back home, or by the time I talk to my mom, she'd be the better person to explain what's going on.
Why? Her?
My mother is a spiritual person.
Okay.
She is not a Sangoma, she's not a prophet, but she is spiritual.
Okay.
I don't know if you understand.
I get it.
So yeah. She's always been my first point of reference. in such things, anything related to spirituality, basically. So yeah, it started with the dreams, and then when I came back to Joburg, we decided to go consult, and it was confirmed that there is a calling, and however I have to belik like fixed into someone to emsamo and pahla and to all those things.
And during that time, what was, outside of the dreams, how did your life experiences, or how was the spiritual aspect affecting your everyday life?
Financially, mostly. It was affecting me financially. I was always a responsible person when it came to finances, but they just kept on spiraling down and down and down and down and down. And the more that happened, the more the dreams came. And relationship wise, that department was bad. So it was like a whole pattern. I didn't necessarily get sick. However, in 2015, I did get sick. But I didn't know it was related to ubungoma. My feet, I couldn't walk.
Where were you during 2015?
In 2015, I was here in Joburg. I was working in Rosebank. And it was just after I lost my dad, if I'm not mistaken, whereby I had the feet problem. I went to, I think it's called an orthodontist. They gave me special shoes and whatnot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then
like when, for shoes for old people.
Yeah, like I was required to like get like shoes from Green Cross and
yeah,
like they gave me a special sole to put in every shoe that I used to wear. That didn't help. None of us thought about consulting. None of us thought about,
there was no reason, right?
Yeah, there was no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no reason. So yeah, well, and then when I got to Durban, I went to Durban with the foot problem. But a few weeks into Durban, I visited the beach and that was the end of it. The feet thing just disappeared. I went into the beach and, you know, like us black people would. But yeah, that
so
was
it's not, it's not something you did consciously.
No, it's not. And after that, the pain was gone. Like it only came to mind like after a few weeks, like, hey, I'm not feeling any pain anymore. Like, what's going on? You know? And I had forgotten about it, that I was ever sick. So yeah, that's just basically it from that perspective.
And then it got more serious then with the dreams.
Yeah.
And you were seeing a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And when then it came time, or rather when it was confirmed that you have to go epilepsy, how did that process in that period, how in that period in your life, how was that affected?
It took me a few years to go into epilepsy. But I was shown everything whilst before going into epilepsy. I remember like it was probably a month or two before I went to epilepsy, and like I had this dream that just kept on playing in my mind, and I'm like to my mom, we just need to go consult. We went to go consult and I was told, okay, your time has passed way long. And you need to take umsebenzi, and obviously there are dangers involved in you refusing. And after that consultation, I was relieved. I got all the answers I needed. My spirit was, it felt like it was at home, if I can put it like that, with the person that was giving me this consultation, who now happens to be Gobela. And my whole family who was with me in the consultation, they were at ease. They felt like, okay, this is the right place. There wasn't much of an age gap between me and my Gobela, and they felt that we would relate on a youth type of level, whereby we'd have an understanding. And
did you also think that?
Yes, yes. Hence, I'm saying my spirit was at ease, and I felt like I was at home, you know. I trusted her from the get-go. And that's how I came about in going to Eskolweni Sakhe and starting my initiation process there.
How did you communicate this at work? What kind of conversations were you having at work?
I didn't have a formal conversation with HR.
And your colleagues, like, did you tell anyone that you're working with, like, hey, this is the situation, I think this might be
one. I don't discuss my personal stuff with my colleagues. However, when they saw that obviously my attire has changed and I'm now a different person, basically. No makeup, no earrings, and I'm now beaded up and stuff like that. I did speak to my then boss. I'm like, okay, I'm going through changes in my life, spirituality wise, and because of the different cultures, the different races, I don't think he understood, but he was okay with it. He'd keep on checking up on me. How is it going? How's your process going? Are you okay?
Did that help, you think?
I think it did help, because there would be times where I'd need to be off of work and I'd ask him, like, it was during COVID time. Yeah, during COVID. And I'd ask him to work from home. So me knowing what I have to do with Petlueni and still juggle work on the side.
So your trading then was not where you have to be there full time every day, the whole day for months on end?
I'd say it was 50-50. I had to go to work. Because
is this a conversation that you had with Gobela that
yes,
were you ever requested or was it ever indicated that you have to be here every day?
No.
And not go to work?
No, it was never. No. I think Badimu knew that I have to go to work because financially my family wouldn't be able to assist me in whatever was needed. And that whole process would be on me. So I needed funds to go to work. I needed to bring in the money. I needed that money to buy whatever was needed at Pitlin.
And how was the moving between, you know, especially in going to work, that constant shifting, like, especially in the beginning, like, you know, let's say the very first time you went back to work and you had your beads and you looked different. How was that, those, that beginning stage of it?
I remember the Monday after I went to Epetlweni officially.
To work on Monday?
Yeah. I went to Epetlweni on the Saturday.
Yes.
And on Monday, I had to go to work. I remember, obviously, that Monday, there are stuff that we do, especially in the morning. at like 3 a.m. At 5, I had to be up again, prepare myself for work. And it was like, it was raining, but not that hard. And I had to travel like, I think 60 kilometers from where I was mm-hmm. to my workplace. And I remember on the road, it's raining, windows are now a bit misty, and I'm sleep driving now.
Yeah.
So.
Because you're exhausted.
I'm exhausted, and it's just only the first day, you know. So I'd say the exhaustion took a toll on me, like seriously, with going epithelene and work and then having to spend 8 hours at work. I'd find myself like dozing off while doing work, looking at the computer screen. I think that's the most thing that had an impact on me, because obviously sleeping on the job, you're not getting enough rest. What is going on at home? Are you having issues? Now they want to think, okay, there's stuff going on, you know?
And how was your colleagues? How did they receive you? Like when they saw like, okay, you are now this person.
I wouldn't say they were happy or sad, but there was definitely a change within them.
Yeah.
Before I went to Petlweni, I'd have people greeting me, hi, Rifilwe, how are you? You know, like corridor conversations. And there is one specific lady who is also Mgoma there. I remember when the first day I went back to work, I received no greeting from her till today. I don't know why, but I still make it a point to.
Why do you, like, if you were to imagine it, like, what do you think is the reason?
I don't want to play it on the whole loses are clashing or anything like that. I would just say it's just the person themselves. That has chosen not to carry on with the relationship, with the work relationship as it was before. I don't want to put it too much on spirituality, whereby I'm putting the blame or shifting it or anything like that. However, some people were still the same. I just got the respect that I needed during that process. Although it was difficult because in the work that I'm doing, I have to be in contact with other people.
How is that an issue?
So I'm beaded up, wearing amabayi, and now I have to touch somebody's laptop and fix whatever the issue is or be in their personal space, you know? So, and they're not used to me being in that attire, and it was uncomfortable for some of them.
And the aroma.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
You know, exactly, because no perfume. So, yeah. That was the case. The uncomfortable part of it.
Because sometimes you're baking in that mpepo.
Yes, definitely.
Right?
Definitely. It's just that. It's just that I've always been a person that keeps to themselves. During lunch hours, I always sit in my car and just eat. I'd actually use that time to catch some sleep.
Really?
Yeah. So I wouldn't hang around a lot of people. I still don't. I still like my lunchtime to myself. I take it as me time. So nothing really has changed after that. I just like the fact that they gave me my space and respected the whole process.
Have people ever come to you sort of trying to slide in consultation?
Yes, they still do. They still do, which I find a bit difficult, you know, because now you have to separate work and
Work.
yes. So even after Epehlweni, I still have people who want to consult, and I help them, and that doesn't change anything between the work relationship and patient relationship. I still do what I have to do, and I try not to talk to them during working hours. You know, just not to make them feel uncomfortable. In case somebody might be thinking, oh, this one is going to Refilwe for consultations and getting promotions and wada, because of this person. So I make it a point to always be available on my phone. If something is needed, I'm there, I'm available, and we make time.
In how your particular modality works and how your particular gift works, do you pick up on things at work? If you get what I mean.
Yes, I do. I do. Just yesterday, this lady that I'm talking about was sick. This particular Mgoma. In a way, I knew it was Badimo, but I didn't want to get involved because, you know, like, basically based on the way the relationship is, I didn't want to get involved. Yes, there is other Bangoma that assisted in whatever way they could assist, and she was taken home. So I didn't want to invade the space, but I do notice things. I do notice things at work. And because not everybody has an open mind, because not everybody believes in Ubungoma, I usually keep it to myself. But if I do see a problem with someone, and I have like an open relationship with them, and Lozi relays a message. And in most cases, you'll find that it's a person telling me their problem. And I'll just recommend a few things in a not so logically way, so that they don't feel like, okay, now I'm in a consultation, you know? So I try to keep it as light as possible. So that they come back on their own personal level to say, okay, can I get a consultation with you? I remember you said X, Y, Z. And then, yeah, we take it from there.
Do you think that it is unethical for you as a healer, or in your view as a healer, for people to use imiti to advance at work?
No, I don't.
In an attempt, rather, let me put it.
I don't think it's unethical. I think the problem comes to when you use imiti for wrong things, for delaying people advancing in whatever they want. Imiti iwasho, you use them to cleanse yourself, to cleanse your aura, your energy.
Can you use imiti to get a promotion?
You can use it. You know, there are things that hinder us from prospering in life, work particularly. You find guti, you've got this baggage on you from wherever, and that baggage is kind of like stopping you from progressing, emsebenzini, from excelling, from your bosses seeing your potential.
And these are spiritual factors that you're talking about, or do you mean personal?
It can be personal too. And as soon as you take that bath, it doesn't necessarily have to be iwash or futi. It can be just a normal milk bath with your eggs or whatever concoction you have, and to just cleanse your aura, to go to tandege emsebenzini, to have that light around you, to have that light energy, so that, okay, this person, you can see who's too fresh, and they've got nice ideas, they've got a clear head, they're bringing fresh ideas to work, so why then, not give them a promotion?
So enmity won't, or that route won't give you something that is not, shouldn't be yours?
No, no. I think enmity helps those who help themselves. Enmity won't do all the work if you're not going to put in anything. If I'm obviously ngiphahlela imoto, I want to get a car, my finances are not right, I've got a million accounts, obviously my credit score is not gonna be so impressive, and Emits is not gonna just close all of that, like make your debt disappear. You need to work towards that, and obviously involving isidalwa zakini, obviously to get whatever you want, but making sure ukuthi we are working towards closing legality in order to have that car that you want.
Can another person then hinder another person from progressing at work?
Definitely, yes.
Does it happen?
It does happen, yes. It does. It does.
Do people do this consciously? Like,
yes.
Go to a person and say, "Baye kumuntu," and say, "I want this person not to get this." Or do they approach it as, "There's a promotion. I believe that it is mine, and I need to do whatever it takes."
You know, okay, I don't want to say ugloya, but hindering somebody from progressing, you don't need enmity. Just a simple, like, word from the tongue, or a negative thought from your heart to say, "I don't want this person to get this job," is enough muti nje to hinder anybody from getting what they want. It doesn't necessarily require you to go eskolweni somuntu and get enmity. Just having a bad heart will hinder anyone or yourself from getting whatever you want. That's what I believe.
If you were to find that there is someone who is doing that to you, what would you do? Lightning?
No. Definitely not. I think it goes back to what you were taught, Epehlweni. And most importantly, your humanity, the type of person that you are. If you believe in ukubuyisela ububi ngobubi, then you will definitely send back that lightning. But if it were to happen to me, obviously I would get the proper cleansing, make sure ukuthi ngiqinile as inyanga and ngiqinile as umuntu. You don't directly approach a person. It's like saying, "Hey, I saw you doing, killing someone, and I'm going to report you," or something like that. What are the chances of that person coming back and killing you, you know, type of thing. So, because there's a lot of danger in actually confronting somebody to say, "Uti, you are using enmity on me," and I think there's a law against that. Like, I think it's defamation of character, or whether you're tarnishing somebody's name, you know, and it might just turn out nasty.
If you are at work and you are, you know, Bambi Network, right? And and you're picking up that there is someone who is doing something to someone else. There's a colleague doing things to another colleague. As a healer, what is your role or perspective in those kind of situations?
I think it goes back to that thing whereby you see somebody that has inkinga, you see a vision or whatever, you get told a message, whatever, through idlozi. And you need to relay that message, but then you're thinking again, we at work, there's people around, how am I going to make this person feel, like, in terms of comfortability? So in that case, I'd rather call them aside and say, hey,
that guy, that one, the one in the blue shirt, that one.
No, I won't even point them out, you know. I'll just say, you know what, I've got this thing in my mind, and this is what's happening, and I think you need to attend to it as soon as you can. Please come see me when you have a chance, you know. I'm not gonna be doing...
It's such a risk. I can see where the risk is.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be doing a name calling and whatnot, you know.
Yeah, because and by that I mean, such things can very easily backfire.
Yeah, they can.
Because they can. Should that person not be familiar with what you're saying,
yes,
or not believe in those mm-hmm. kind of things, mm-hmm. and now you are
advising,
and you're sort of planting a thought in yes. their head that.
Yes.
And they could turn around and say, you are actually the problem.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Because
exactly.
you're trying to, you know.
Exactly.
So. Devil worship, are you? You want to pull me into the darkness. Mm. Because I can imagine, because the spirituality and religion, you know, have a complex relationship, mm-hmm. especially in the workplace. When if you find someone who is maybe not even an outward Christian, but yeah. they are quite very Christian, they just don't talk about it. And mm-hmm. then you go, you know, if I'm deeply Christian, and then you come to me telling me that I must come to you.
Yeah.
I will never want to talk to you ever again.
Of course, of course. So we must tread carefully. I think it just depends, like, what kind of relationship you have with the people at work. If, obviously, you and I don't greet each other at work and we don't laugh or joke in the corridors, I think I'd rather come back home and partner and say, hey, this is the situation. How do I get this message across? Yeah. You know, seeing that there are multiple factors, especially since it's at work. I think it's the same thing as going out to parties, whereby.
Because that's been a touchy issue
yeah.
for some time, whether you should, people getting unsolicited consultations.
Yes. Yes, you see, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Same. It's the same.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, we must tread carefully when it comes to that.
I think there's more to this topic. Let's do a part two. My name is Basum Zinlani. Thank you for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.